Welcome to Clocker Counter. I'm Ryan Young, and with me is James Wiseman. So today we're going to talk about the year-end 2024 rankings for Freestyle Frisbee. And before that, we're going to get a few updates from James and myself. So James, it's been a while. So what's been happening?
It's been so long that I don't even really know what's been happening. Obviously, lots of progression from our various Duke freestylers. We have Matthew, our freshman, who's becoming a guitarist guru. He's been playing pretty much every day with the Duke, other Duke guys. Will is, if not a top five player, top 10 player in the world. I think that's becoming less and less surprising to people. And also Ray, I'm getting really fired up about. I think he's really starting to figure out how to use his link. And for instance, he's doing really nice full body rolls off of brush runs, which looks so cool when you have crazy long arms like he does. And he's also really getting the catching down. So I think one co-op team to look out for in 2025 is Paul, Kenny, Ray, and Will, who played last year. And I think that was a fun story. And I think, didn't they get like fourth or fifth or something? Like, they actually did pretty well. Yeah. But I think they'll be much better positioned this year with all the leaps and bounds that Will and Ray have made.
Nice.
But otherwise, I don't know. We have one potential new player who's an ultimate player who started. I felt really bad. This person's been texting me constantly to play. But every time they text me, it's literally like 0 degrees outside and 45 mile per hour wind. But we finally went out there and he got the delay reasonably well. And some of his ultimate skills, I think, helped him get through some of the other basics. So I'm optimistic that maybe he'll stick with it, even if it's in a more casual capacity.
Nice. That's exciting. Ray, I'm playing with Ray this year, so his improvement sound is good for me.
Why didn't anyone tell me that? Ray didn't tell me that. You didn't tell me that. That's so exciting.
Wait, you were there. You brokered the deal.
I brokered the deal?
In Warsaw.
Ryan, I think I have real memory problems.
Obviously.
Like, sometimes I'll go to like search for an email that I sent, and some email will pop up from work that I sent like 2 days ago, and I'll be like, I have no recollection writing this 2-page email. So that must have just kind of disappeared from my brain somehow. So that is awesome. I'm excited.
Okay. Yep.
Have y'all picked a song or done any discussions?
We have a few songs in mind, but we haven't chosen one yet. I think we won't start boot camping until after Virginia.
Okay. Also, quick aside, and it's coming back to you and Ray. Have you seen The Brutalist?
No.
I have mixed feelings on it. I know some people say it's our latest, greatest American masterpiece. I'm going back and forth. I'm somewhere between a 3.5-star movie and a 5-star movie, which is quite a range. I never really have that. I might need to see it again. But the music and The Brutalist is amazing. And I feel like there has to be some cool routine song in there. So
okay.
I do recommend considering listening to that soundtrack.
Okay.
I don't feel bad about giving this out on the podcast because you're the only one I know who would actually listen to the entirety of The Brutalist soundtrack. It's a 3.5-hour movie.
Okay. I have the time.
Of course you do.
Yeah. So my update is, since I just retired, I've been trying to, like mad scientist tinker with tools to help people learn how to freestyle. And the first one I want to figure out is the delay, because I've always thought if you could teach someone to delay in 30 minutes, our sport would explode. And so I built this thing. I think I sent James a picture of it. And it's just like a spaghetti of wires on a coat hanger right now, where I am trying to simulate a disc that floats in the air and spins like Harry Potter. And what it is, it's like a normal hanger that you use to like hang your clothes on. And it has a motor suspended from two wires from the clothes hanger. And the motor is attached to a disc and it spins. And it just kind of sits there. I hook the hanger on a tripod and I just let it sit there in the air. And you like reach under and there's a spring that holds the weight of just the motor. So you're just lifting the disc up. And it feels pretty natural to me when I delay on it. And I had a couple friends test it out. So one is a dance friend. We were just like in passing. So as a baseline, I would throw myself spin on a normal disc, hand it over to them, and like immediately it would like fly off their finger. So I had them on the trainer now, just like place their finger underneath it in one spot just to like feel where, like how the disc feels when it's sliding on your hand. And then I would slow the discs down to like maybe 200 RPMs, and I would have them try and circle their finger on the disc so it wouldn't slide. So they're just kind of like holding one point on the disc and like getting used to that circle. And after maybe like 10 minutes of that, I threw them the disc, or like went back to the real disc and placed it on their finger like with real spin. And they could do like two or three circles before it would fall off. Like, imagine what someone brand new would be able to do after like a full day of training. That's what they could do after 10 minutes.
And how many seconds do you think they were delaying it?
Like 1 second.
Okay.
So like 1 second before they lost control. So maybe like 2 seconds total.
I mean, I'm interested, but I feel like I get people to delay off the throw a few seconds pretty quickly.
So already. I've seen what it does. It looks different than when we do the Duke method, because the Duke method is luck. And they're just like doing muscle. They're just like, they're just trying to like simulate the circle movement. But like when, what I saw is like, they're actually correcting it for that 1 second. And then they like make a mistake and then it flies off. But if we had like another 10 minutes, I'm sure they could have gotten it. So the next day I had a friend that I just did the same thing for like 2 minutes, and he could do it. Like, I only tried it like twice, but he could like correct it like 3 or 4 times. Like, he could chase the disc and it would stay flat the entire time. And so I'm sure like after another 10 minutes, he could probably like delay until like the spin was like running out.
That would be cool. I think we're gonna have to do some A/B testing here. I'm very intrigued by this.
If you could see it in real, like, I'll make a video of it for the next person, so you can see, but it looks very different than doing the Duke method. So like the biggest difference I noticed is, you know, when someone's just starting to learn, it's really bumpy. And like when they do the circle, it like chatters right on their finger. Like, that goes away immediately. Like, that's their cool. Circle is very flat because I think they're practicing on the disc in 3D space. And so like when you put it on their finger, it like instantly settles. Like, it doesn't bounce at all. Like, they learn the softness of the take for some reason, which doesn't make sense to me.
And how many of these could you make for how little money if it worked really well?
Yeah. So my friend from yesterday is a mechanical engineer, so we're talking about it afterwards, and he like showed me how to build it cheaply. And I think like even buying one-off parts on Amazon, this costs about $50.
Yeah.
And it could be like $20 if we mass produced it. And it takes me probably 30 minutes to put it together. So it's pretty like a viable solution. Like, when we go to orientation this year, we're going to have like several of them. Like, however many tripods we have, we're going to have that many set up.
That is pretty cool. And you remind me of something else. You have another project you're getting back into, which is video making, right?
Yes. So I bought a Sony A7 C2, and I got a 20mm lens, which is the lens that is used to film all like the popular like hip hop dance classes nowadays. And I got a gimbal, and I'm just trying to find or have like places to use it now. So I made.
Did you get an electric gimbal?
Yeah, it's like a DJI.
Yeah.
Yeah, RS3. And it's awesome. It's so much easier to use than the Steadicam gimbal.
The thing that we used to use was so hard to get right. Yeah.
Like, I think there are trade-offs, but for me, at my skill level, it's all improvement. Like, I never even I'm not even good enough to see the downsides of the electronic gimbal.
That's so cool. Well, I'm excited to see all the stuff you make with it.
Yep. I just got a smoke machine, so I need to find a space where we can like fill the room with smoke to get the volumetric lighting but it's hard to find an indoor space.
You're gonna run out of freestylers soon. I know you're gonna do more than just freestyle. But I sort of ran out of freestylers to film pretty quickly when I was more into making videos that were sort of like demonstrative of like showing just a particular person and what they could do back in like the Spread the Jam days.
So my new thing I want to do is, the Spread the Jam was really good about showcasing players, but what I'm doing with Mike is like the next person I'm working with is I choreograph the moves for him to the music. That way it's just not all about him. It's just like, it's more like we're making a video instead of showcasing.
I thought the video you made already was super cool. And I like that if you choreograph it the right way, you can make a video of any freestyler probably really cool, even if they were super new, for instance.
Yeah. I'm all about getting the casual freestyler. I want to make the 5-second TikTok combination that anyone can do. Like, it probably doesn't even involve delaying, but it involves like some kind of freestyle skill, and just film a ton of people doing like this short form thing. And just, yeah.
Does this mean I have to root for TikTok to not be banned over the next period of American history?
I hear it's already been banned for 2 days.
Well, it got unbanned. I don't know. We shouldn't even talk about it.
Okay, we can switch to Instagram out, Reels.
It'll be very influx about what's going on with it. Like, I don't have TikTok, so I don't really have a dog in the fight, but I find the whole thing incredibly fascinating.
I'm worried. Like, it's like Q-tips or Kleenex. Like, if I say Instagram Reels, I feel like people aren't going to know what I'm talking about, even though that's the only thing I watch.
I know what you're talking about, and I don't have either one. So okay. TikTok makes sense to me.
Yeah. That's why I use the word TikTok instead of Instagram Reels. But like, I haven't used TikTok in years. So.
Yeah, you probably used it when it was still a Musical.ly app or something.
Yeah, it was called Musical.ly. It was the first time I saw it.
Yeah,
and I was so like, this is going to be huge.
But, form.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right, any other updates?
Nope. I guess we'll get to our main thing, which is the 2024 rankings. So thank you to Daniel O'Neill, who did a lot of work entering all the missing results, which I know takes a lot of manual labor. Okay, so we'll just go through the top 10 for both men and women's, and then we'll discuss after.
Let's do it.
Cool. So for 2024, open rankings. So number one, Daniel O'Neill. Number two, Francesco Santillan. Number three, James Wiseman. Number four, Ryan Young. Number five, Ricardo Montanari. Number six, Mirdad Hussainian. Number seven, Jakob Kostel. Number eight, Thomas Nutzel. Number nine, Fabian Dinklage. And number 10, Anka Radwanski. So for women's.
Very cool.
Yeah. I think we'll go through. Let's just go through women's right now, too.
Okay.
So for the women's rankings for 2024, number one, Ilka Simone. Number two, Katie Gimma. Number three, Angela Avendano. Number four, Shar Powell. Number five, Benedict Audit. Number six, Bianca Kostelova. Number seven, Sofia Wilczek. Number eight, Maya Kuzinska. Number nine, Sylvina Porsche. And number 10, Emilia Fongi. So there's a lot to talk about.
Can I say the first thing that jumps out to me as so critical? So I don't know if this is on the website. You could obviously figure this out, but you helpfully did some summing here. And among the top men, but in this case, it's nine men and one woman. There are 108 total events. And for the women's rankings, it's 168. So in the women's,
this is actually divisions. So it could be skewed because women can play one more division than open.
I see. That's interesting. Okay. I don't even really know what to think then. But even still, that's at least like matching, if not wildly exceeding, the number of events by the women. And that definitely, I feel like, reflects what we've noticed the last couple of years, which is that there's more and more women playing. Like, not only just more and more women playing, period, but the women that are playing more consistently. So I think that's a really amazing development. Like, I don't think there were many women when we started playing that had 29 events in the 2 year period.
Yeah.
And I get that I'm calling it events and it's really more like division. So 29 events could in theory be only 10 tournaments, but it's probably more like 20 tournaments because not that many tournaments have all three divisions available. Mm-hmm. But there's one other problem though, which is that in open, there are several people that have like zero tournaments basically that are in the top 10, which would be me, Ricardo, and Fabian. So like me and Fabian only have four tournaments. So we're kind of bringing down the average. But I guess there's two ways to frame that, right? It's a good thing for the women, but it's a little bit concerning for the men. But I wonder if you did like top 25, I keep saying men, I'm really screwing up. I apologize. Open. If you extended the open to 25, would they recover in terms of number of events attended? Or do we need to be really concerned about people not competing in the open divisions enough?
I think it would even out open versus women, because I bet...
Ryan, I lost you completely for a second.
You can't hear me anymore?
Now I can hear you. Okay. I don't know why you disappeared.
Okay. I bet if you extended it out, let's say to the top 50, the open and women ranking or like division counts would be similar, because I think on the women's side, the number of, or like the women who go to a lot of events place higher. I think that correlation is a lot stronger than in open. So like on the open side.
Oh, I see what you mean. That's really interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that.
I think you're the classic example, because you have a ton of these points, but you don't go to, and you're not competing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that part bothers me. Like, I don't think it's good if I'm ranked third with four tournaments and haven't even competed in 14 months or whatever.
It's because the ranking algorithm is top heavy.
Well, I don't mean it's a problem with the ranking system. I think it's a problem with people need to step up and start competing more.
It's the reason for both. It's because you have these points that no one else could have gotten. Like, there's no way for someone to overtake you because it's zero sum. Like, you have these points that no one else can get.
I thought it's not the rating system, though. Like, the rating, if I don't compete, I'm like sucking points out of the ether.
Yeah, because those points are Worlds points. Like, your four entries are from Worlds, and people needed those Worlds points to overtake you.
What would you have to do to, like, you could not, what would you have to do to not win or even podium in Worlds but still be in the top 10?
In the top 10?
Yeah.
Frisbeer, Virginia States. So if you look at the details on Daniel and how he got to number one, the top four are Worlds, but the other four are Frisbeer and Virginia States. So you would have to place well there.
Interesting. It's interesting that Virginia is worth so much. It's just because there's a lot of players.
Yeah, because the algorithm's based on players.
Well, if Europeans need a reason to go to Virginia, my favorite tournament in the world, that's a really good value for your time, because it's worth a lot of points, but there aren't that many super serious competitors there.
So like right now, it is much better to have one big tournament if you're going for ranking points than it is to have a lot of different or like several smaller events with the same number of people total because of like the nonlinear versus like value of the bigger tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, I do still think just looking at the list of open and women's, these are all players you would expect. Like, everyone here is really amazing and should be here. I don't really remember when the last time, not that I would have ever said anything necessarily, that there was someone in the top 10 that was super surprising.
Will was just outside the top 10 last year.
Yeah, I guess that one was a little bit surprising because he was still sort of becoming who he was and he only had like two tournament results. But I just more mean like, it's not that easy to not be that good, but by sheer attrition, Will compete in so many events and do well enough times to make it to the top 10. Yeah. Like, pretty much everyone here is actually really good. Yeah. One thing that's kind of interesting to me on the women's side is Sylvina. I haven't even seen her in like 6 or 7 years, but apparently she was competed 9 times and made it to the top 10, which is pretty cool. She was amazing when I last saw her, but she hasn't gone to any Worlds. But otherwise, everyone in the top 10 of women's has at least one world's appearance, if I'm going by memory.
Yeah.
And everyone in open was in one or two world over the last 2 year period.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
So let's talk about people who dropped out from the top 10.
Wait, let's go through notable call outs first.
Okay.
Start us off. Daniel O'Neill, first time getting to the number one of open rankings.
I think huge deal.
Yep. Well-deserved. He went 1-2 this year, and I think he went 1-2 in 2023 as well, right, at Worlds?
Yes. And this is a pretty monster score. I get that it's not totally analogous, the new numbers versus the old system numbers, but they're not that far off. And this, besides you and me, he's like with the Christian Lamrad, who had set like a long-standing record. So this is like the third highest cumulative score ever, and I think you have the highest ever.
It's hard to say. It was within like 50 points between you and me.
Yeah, but that's pretty wild. Normally it's more over like the course that we've been playing, it's more evenly dispersed, the points among the top 10, but 1685 is pretty dominant. Because not how it's not that common that someone has 1122. I mean, that's super hard to pull off.
Yep. Okay. Let's.
What else do you got? Who else do you like on here?
Ricardo Montanari. I think this is the first time entering the top 10, and not only top 10, top five.
And Svelte's top five with only 8 events.
Yeah.
That's really efficient to be that high with 8. That, I think that's really cool. But, you know, he's still like a little bit more than half as many points as Daniel, which is pretty crazy. Chesko is very close to Daniel with 1452, which would be number one worthy points a lot of years. And I remember talking to Daniel after Worlds, and he wasn't sure which one of them would be number one. I think even I wasn't totally sure either. But now, in hindsight, it seems so obvious because 1122 is really hard to beat. But Chesko is going to have 1-2-2, and then I guess he's missing one open slot because he and Anka had a nail lost in open pairs of 2023. But if he and Anka had performed more as expected, like they easily could have been the favorites in 2023, then he probably would be in the number one spot, or at least very close.
Yep. See,
like that's sort of like what happened with me and you, where if Chesko and Anka had beaten me and Daniel in 2023, I think that would have swapped the rankings for a long time.
Yeah. Wait, how do you mean?
So like a head-to-head matchup and when two players are near each other on the rankings is so critical.
Oh, yeah. Especially
especially at Worlds. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Daniel and I won in 2023 and Chesko and Anka had a bad round has a huge impact on the 1-2 slot in 2024.
Yep.
So if Chesko and Anka had beaten Daniel, then I think Chesko would be number one. Yeah.
This is also like first world problems. So the gap between first and second is huge for ranking points, but the gap between like seventh and eighth is relatively small. So like if this only matters at like the top three positions. So,
yeah. Yeah. But that's interesting. It's also interesting that both Daniel and Chesko probably can't be unseated for at least 2 more worlds, because I don't know if many people on here could do well enough to topple them. Like even if you won both divisions in open next year, you would have to hope Daniel or Chesko did pretty badly to unseat them.
Yeah, there is a lot of momentum in the rankings. Like,
yeah, I mean, just I remember this before, like back in the day when it wasn't very obvious that I was going to win anything. Like I knew if I had one good year at Worlds, I could ride that momentum for 2 years. Like that was pretty much a guarantee. If you were like podium in both open divisions at Worlds, you pretty much were going to be in the top 10 for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Other just notable mentions, like kind of everyone here is pretty notable. Jakob Kostel, I think he's been ranked really high before, right? But he's not been ranked in the top 10 for a while. Nutsy, has he ever been in the top 10 before?
That I would have to go back and check, but I have a feeling this is the highest he's ever been in the rankings.
It's pretty cool and very well deserved. I'm super happy for him.
He has a Frisbeer win in there.
Oh, that was very memorable. I mean, he's one of my favorite players, and so that's great. Fabian, 4 events, top 9. That's pretty wild. I guess if I remember correctly, I think he swept Canaria, right? With Daniel or something. Whatever. He must have done really well in Canaria. So he must have 1-1 from Canaria and then 1-2 in Worlds. So that's a 1-1-1-2, which is pretty crazy. I actually don't know what my 4 are. Do you know?
I'm guessing it's
Worlds, and then I don't know.
Frisbeer, probably.
But wouldn't it have to be something closer to Worlds? I don't know. I haven't played in a long time. 2020, I think Worlds was my last event. So something, I don't know, whatever. It's just interesting. And then Anka, she's number 10, which is not surprising. I mean, she's not competed as much as she has in the past. And she hasn't done as well as you would expect given her skill level. But it certainly makes sense she's in the top 10. The only question is how much higher would she be if she had competed more consistent with her history? I think like that's kind of where I come down on. Okay, so before going to the women's, just like notable absences. So some people that dropped off. Ed O'Turi, who I think is like maybe like the person I think is the best player competing right now. He's dropped off, and that's because he's missed two worlds.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's pretty hard to make it into the top 10 if you don't have any slots for worlds. And just to remind everybody, but you're going to have to correct me, Ryan, because I don't totally remember how it works under the new system. Worlds is, it gets like a 50% bonus.
It's a flat 100 points, I believe.
Which works out to be a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's worth a lot more to yep. win worlds than something else, which is as it should be. So I think assuming he makes it to the next couple worlds, he should vault back up very, very high. He also hasn't necessarily competed or hasn't been as successful in competition as you would expect relative to his skill level, which is to say, like, you would think he would win absolutely everything, but he has more variance in where he places. Like, he can win and he can also get fifth. Like, usually if you're going to be consistently in the top like three spots, you pretty much need your range to be 1 to 3. But I think we'll see him move up. Andrea Festi is off. I don't think he's competing right now, so that makes sense. Andres Rivera is off. Also makes sense. Not competing much. Tom Leitner's off. It's only shocking that Tom Leitner's made it so long. He's been in the top 10 for like 1,000 years. So, I mean, there's like kudos. Especially like the longer I play, and like obviously having a retirement, I mean, I probably will play at some tournament at some point just for fun in my life. But now when I'm like, the idea that Tom Leitner did what I did for 15 years and it felt impossible, the fact that he did that for like 40 years is yeah. unbelievable. The amount of work and stress and travel that would go into competing at Worlds every year for that many years in basically every division, it's crazy. So it wouldn't shock me at all if he makes it back into the top 10 very soon. And otherwise, yeah, Will be in the top 10 by the end of the year, pretty much. I don't think it's possible to keep him out of the top 10 at this point. Do you?
Nope. Not so, with what you've been telling me.
Yeah, I mean, Will's going to hit like 3 quads at Worlds this year. So just brace yourself for that. Okay, so now notable mentions for women. You want to get us started there?
Yep. Ilka defending her number one ranking from 2023.
Yeah, so she could be on top here for quite a while. But I do think there are, I don't know how to put it, almost like there's more women that are competing as often and as intensely as Ilka. So like in that sense, she probably has more competition. Like if you look at the open division, at least, I don't know what he'll do going forward, but I think Daniel competes a lot and takes it super seriously and builds routines for everything. And like Chesko is probably the same way, but nobody else in the top 10 is necessarily that as committed, right? Like,
yep.
I'm leaving. Like, I'm not going to be there. You are doing more of a project of like bringing on new players. Ricardo, maybe, but like he has not that many events on here and doesn't seem to travel quite as much. Murda definitely, Murda should get a shout out for jamming his way to number 6. Like, he is jamming and doing that well, which is incredible. Jakob is going to have like 12 children by the end of all this. Nutsy also is more in the jamming camp, or like maybe build a routine there, but not doing it like Daniel. Fabian only has 4 events. And like Anka is sort of a question mark what her commitment will be going forward. But like you look at the women, like Ilka and Katie, Char, Zofia, Micah, like those are that I know are all competing a lot, preparing routines, and like really putting themselves in a position to win events. So like that's a lot of people sort of trying to take the same lane in terms of like freestyle competition success. And there could be others on here that I just don't have as much insight into. Like Anhela, if she's traveling, absolutely would be on that list. Bianca, I think, certainly has gotten back into competing more often and more seriously, and she's one of the best players ever. So, and then Sylvina, who I never see, but apparently wins every tournament that she goes to. So, like, Ilka is going to have to put in a lot of work to keep that spot, I think. Yep. Any other big mentions? I mean, I think we have to point out that Char and Zofia have 29 events. That's unbelievable.
It's so great.
That's so many events. It's like, and in some ways it's even more impressive from Char in one sense, which is that Char is doing it from the United States. I get that she travels a lot and like spends a lot of her time in Europe, but there are three events in the US now. So yeah. To go get 29 events means an incredible amount of travel to pull it off. Whereas Berlin, if you want to go to a lot of events, Berlin is the place to be because you're in the central hub of freestyle. You can kind of get where you need to go. But kudos to both of them. And Micah obviously was a big shout out player from Worlds this year. So super thrilled that she's in the top 10. And I suspect and hope that she'll just keep moving up the rankings. I just don't know if the fact that they were hosting Worlds fired her up more to go out and travel and compete. But I hope she's just fired up, period, and will keep going to lots of events.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And I would love to see, I mean, it's like Benedict has 11 events, so there's not really a lot that you can complain about there. But if she had 29 events, I think they would be pretty hard to topple her with what she can do. And as far as notable absences, there really aren't that many who fell off from 2023. So we have Gloria Alessandrini. That's another one where like, I don't know how she was in the top 10 last year because I haven't seen her in 10 years. So she must be going to events that are not really on my radar. And then it looks like, is it Frederica has dropped off? Yeah. Emilia and Fabiana. So I guess that's four people that dropped off. But the people that dropped off, there was already kind of a big drop off from them and the rest of the top 10 in women's. So it's not shocking that they fell off. Also, the women's division increased their point total by 1,300 points.
It's like 13%.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks kind of like a lot because all the people in the bottom three or four basically doubled their point total. Whereas in open, the players lost about 10% of their points.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the women's rankings, the rich got richer. And in the open rankings, it kind of gets spread out.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. Cool. So what about a prediction for the open and women's 2025 year-end rankings? And you go first for open.
So for 2025, Daniel O'Neill, number one.
Okay.
Chesko.
Do we know who he's playing with in Worlds?
I don't think it even matters.
Okay.
I know he's going to try and win. That's all that's what matters to me.
Okay.
I'm going to think Chesko's going to hold number two. And then, because of momentum, this is a lot harder because you will have 0 points in 2025.
Gone.
And will I have enough momentum to carry me? Probably no, I won't. I think it's going to be, it's pretty toss up for number three.
I know exactly who number three is going to be.
But okay, I'm going to guess your guess, which is Ricardo.
Interesting. I'm going to blow your mind when I do. Okay. You're going to feel so wrong.
Okay. I'm going to do top three only because then it gets too...
Do five. Five's easy.
Okay. Yeah. I will say I'm in number four then. I'll hold my place. Okay. And then number five will be Nutsy because I know he's the only person in the top 10 that I know he's going to be at Toronto this year.
Okay. Obviously Daniel's gonna be number one, mm-hmm. but I am going for the wild card pick just to be different. And I'm going number one with a bullet, but obviously not because it's gonna be Daniel. Fabian Dinklage. He is coming to Worlds and he's playing with Will Ho, like the third best player.
Okay, I did not know that information. That changes a lot.
Yeah, so I'm going Fabian number one, Daniel number two. Chesko number three, Will number four. I don't know if he'll have enough events, but he's gonna have a first place in pairs. So that's gonna bring him up a lot, and he'll probably do well in open or in Virginia. And he'll like be done with school and have a job soon. So maybe he'll find ways to go to events. I don't know. But I'm going with who I think has the skill to be there. So I've got Fabian, Daniel, Chesko, Will, and then it's either you or Ricardo, but I'm going to go Ricardo holding five. All right. That's my open. What are you going to do for women?
For women? I think it's easy because whoever plays the most gets the most points based on past trend. So I think it'll be pretty similar, especially if Angela goes to Toronto this year. So it'd be Ilka one, Katie two, Angela, 3, Char, 4. And I know Benedict is going because that's like her hometown, basically. Yeah. So I'll keep Benedict at number 5.
It is so hard because this one, I think, depends so much more on who is going to Worlds, essentially. Because, like, to me, someone I would think maybe would be in the top one or two slots is Zofia, except that I have no idea she's going to Toronto.
Exactly.
But just because I'm having fun swinging for the fences, I'm going 1, Zofia.
Okay.
2, God, Ilka has a huge lead, though. That's pretty hard to beat.
And the bulk of Ilka's points are from this year, so they'll just continue to have them.
Okay, fine. 1, Ilka. 2, Katie. 3, Zofia. 4, Benedict. 5, Angela. I don't know who Char's playing with. It's hard to kick Char down. I have no idea. The women's one is really hard to know. I also don't know who's playing with each other, which is another big factor in women's. Like, if you're, let's say, Katie, and you're trying to get to the number one spot, if you're playing with Ilka, then you're preventing yourself from becoming number one. Which is something I've never really thought about, at least in this way, which is quite interesting. Like, if you were number two and you wanted to be number one, you basically couldn't compete with the number one player.
Yeah.
We sort of had that problem. I mean, that's sort of why we had our 1-2 thing for so long, is that like 7 of our top 8 results were together. So there was not a lot of room for us to separate.
Mm-hmm.
But we had, but it's just like an interesting problem. Like Chesco and Daniel can't play together. They need to be competing against each other. I don't know. But all I know is that Fabian hitched himself to the right horse, and like Fabian might be the number one player for as long as he and Will play together. Okay. All right. Here's a random question, because I feel like you would know as well or better than me. When am I going to be ranked top 10 again, if ever?
Oh, okay. So you know how LeBron James is only playing because his son is in the league now?
Yeah.
So your daughter at some point could compete. And of course, you would come out of retirement to play.
Would there even be freestyle at that point?
Well, I mean, I'm working on it right now. So
interesting. Also, we always avoid this conversation because neither one of us is really the right person to talk about it. In 2035, will there still be an open and women's ranking, or will it be combined or in some other way changed?
I think there will be women's.
Yeah.
Like,
interesting.
I think, isn't the reason for women divisions for just to like have more women? I thought it was just got more women into like whatever activity it was.
I mean, I do not think either one of us is really the right person or knowledgeable about it. I just remember sitting at a bar in Berlin while people who know more about it than me were talking about the gender divisions in general. And there were some fierce arguments on both sides that I found very fascinating and something that I did not want to have to ever wade into.
I see. So I think that's different than if there's going to be gender divisions in 2035.
That's interesting. So you think the gender division conversation is different than the gendered ranking conversation?
Yeah.
I like can sort of see the logic to that. Because, I mean, the interesting thing about rankings, right, is we could make rankings for all kinds of things right now. Like, we have the data to just be like, yep, here's the Italian top 10. Like, there's all kinds of ways we could divide it. And I do think one thing I am at least interested in, and it doesn't really cost anything, is getting sort of better data on things like, here's the top 10 players under 25. Like, here's the top 10 players from wherever. And like part of that comes from my interest in sort of like youth sports movements, where instead of just saying, here's the best eighth graders, they like figure out people's biological age and then say, like, actually, you're really good relative to where you are maturity wise. And you can like figure out more interesting things than just saying all eighth graders. And it turns out like the best swimmers in the world are not getting discovered because they're just young. And like, that's the only reason why they're not succeeding. But like, there are lots of like things that sort of influence where you are in your progression of freestyle. And it'd be cool to have more information to kind of suss out of like, okay, like in the ranking of everyone who's ever played in a tournament, you may be really far down, but if we think about certain like factors, you're actually way like overperforming or something. Just like kind of interesting, like the age one or like how long you played would be like super interesting to me. Like, these are the best players that have only played for however many years. Like, you need people to put in their start date or whatever, but it would just be like fascinating.
Yeah, I guess you could just take their first result and track it that way. That's kind of messy though. Like, it doesn't really tell you that much. but it's still interesting.
I think I'm getting this right, and I apologize if I don't, because it's been so long since I heard this, but I think Dave Murphy told me once that he didn't compete until he knew he'd make the finals. So if that was your mindset, then you would probably like break it open. But the gender division thing, I was just sort of interested in. I've been like thinking about it lately. Also, I'm just mad at myself for saying men and women. I think I was just like creating that dichotomy in my head, but it's open and women's, which is like interesting. And obviously we have like a non-cisgendered male in the top 10 of open, which is cool. Okay. I think, I don't know if I even got that category right or whatever, but we're all doing our best here. I'm learning. Anything else on the rankings or other things to discuss today?
Nope. I think that wraps. That was everything.
Okay. I still feel so rusty at this podcasting business. We gotta get back in shape at it.
Yep. Well,
in peak podcasting, I would not have mixed up men's and women's division. Let me just tell you right there. I wasn't ready. The whole thing, to give listeners a little insight, is now I just show up and you tell me what we're talking about and I do no work because you're retired. But that also means I'm wildly underprepared and I'm going to have more flubs.
This one was a little harder. Already. Yeah, because in the next ones, like, you'll have less. Like, the flubs is the point. Like,
well, honestly, like, the rankings one is always hard. I feel like we did this one at least one other time. Mm-hmm. And there's just like something inherently hard about talking about the rankings in a way that's like sort of interesting and not like offensive to anybody. And it's also tricky because like some of these people I really like hardly know, like wasn't at the events. So it's a little bit hard to discuss. But I think it's a little bit more interesting after like however many years of me and you being one and two. Like, now there's a lot more movement, except that like Daniel might be number one for the next like 10 years, depending on how long he wants to go.
Yeah.
What do we know who the longest like continuous number one player in the world is?
I don't know, but I think that's once we have the SQL database set up, that's easy to figure out.
You know, it'd be such an interesting study because I feel like not many people last that long on it. Like, you might have the record, but like semi pandemic related, but the reason people don't last at number one for very long, I don't think is that like they keep competing and stop winning. I think they just like stop competing or stop trying to win. Like
the mental fatigue.
Yeah, like judge me all you want, but like most freestylers, when they reach number one for a while, kind of lose the drive to keep trying to do it. It sort of becomes like, what's the point? Yeah. But I'm super interested in like, would anyone ever be number one for 10 years? Like, would anyone really want to do that?
I can't even think of someone that would want to do that. Like, I don't know the person that would want that.
Yeah. And what it would take, you know, it's just sort of interesting. Will, I wonder when Will will be number one. Do you have an over-under on that?
My timeline is longer, like 7 years from now.
I mean, that's possible. It's so random, right? Like, Matt was never number one. That's crazy. Like, it doesn't even really make sense. And I became number one really early, but very briefly. And then I wasn't number one for 10 years. So, like, it can take a long time for any number of reasons, like, that are sort of out of your control. I think, like, one, like, I don't know if this is unfortunate. It's just kind of like a weird aspect of it is, so much of your ranking is about who you pair with.
I was just saying the same thing.
Yeah, like it's a massive factor. Like, obviously you and me pairing together served us really well. Yeah. Like, the reason I was number one early is my partners on my 8 events were like Jake Gauthier, Matt Gauthier, Randy Sylvie, Paul Kenny. And then, yeah, like, I mean, that's a huge advantage if like those are the people that you get to play with. And then like after that, it's just willing to do routine building is like probably like the number two biggest factor.
Yeah, routine building. Yeah, and just drilling your catches.
And then also kind of weirdly is who other people are partnered with, right?
Oh, so like, yeah, if it's a hard so like year some, to win or easy.
Yeah, like some years you go out, there might be 20 amazing players, but none of them have partnered with each other. So then your avenue to winning becomes significantly easier.
Yeah.
Okay, those are all my thoughts on the rankings. We will improve as time goes on. All right, take us out, Ryan. You're sort of the boss now.
Okay. All right. Thanks for listening. Send us your questions or anything you want to hear us talk about to our email, clockorcounter@gmail.com. And we'll see you next time.